Thank you, Sarah, very much for that. And so my name is Kirsten Johnson, and I grew up inland on Greenfield Ranch. I was brought there by my parents in the big wave when I was 7 and 74. The previous to that, for the previous 2 years, there was a lot of organizing in Berkeley, where I was, 5, 6, 7. And so I saw a lot, of the buildup to moving up to the land. I'm here as a facilitator. As I said, I grew up in that community. I saw a lot of meetings, and I was kind of traumatized by it. And so one of the things I really wanted to do was learn how to work with groups in a way that would be, help the groups move along more. And I learned, of course, as we all learned together. I can see a couple of faces here that I learned along with, right? And so I'm here for that. And what I want to point out, though, is that we've sort of set out a framework for today. And the core here is to really look and reflect. It's a reflection process. We'll be talking to we'll be asking questions specifically to the panel. We'll be asking for reflections from the youth. I will be directing those questions, and I will make it clear when it's time for the audience to speak, so that then we will be receiving input from the audience on reflecting on, and we want to really kind of dive in, as Laura said, into the values. Not, we can have the memories and all of that stuff, but let's ask ourselves, what did it mean? What does it mean? And so Sarah and Laura will both be having mics. You both have mics, right? And so they'll be passing out, they'll be coming down. So when you need to ask them for, raise your hand, give them, there'll be, Sarah will be on this side and Laura on this side, or one or the other anyway. So, divide the room in half and then just kind of, give them a high sign and they'll come around to you. So I am just going to start in now. And our first question is asking the panel of the Back to the Landers here that we have, four of you, right? What were your dreams? What were your dreams and what brought you? What inspired you? And when you think about what those dreams were, how do you see those in terms of the values? What values were embedded in those dreams that you had? So whoever feels inspired to speak. And then what I'm going to do is ask for a reflection from the youth, and then we'll turn it to the audience.
In my age group, in our early and mid-20s, in the early 60s, some of us had a memory of World War II, certainly of Korea, and certainly aware of Vietnam. And when the Cuban Missile Crisis came to an absolute head-to-head of what was happening in Cuba, a number of us were sharing a dinner in Berkeley at a restaurant appropriately called Red's, and the whole Bay Area had gone quiet. Nobody honked a horn, nobody drove without courtesy, nobody raised their voice. The whole Bay Area went still. It had been ringed with Nike missiles, the Lawrence Rad Lab was up on the hill, the Stanford Accelerator was just south of San Francisco. We were considered a target. And at that dinner, people asked, war is crazy, only city people create war. Let's go to the country. Somebody asked where, and somebody else said Casper. Norman, you've got the truck, you're gonna bring the piano. And so that's how that movement got started of those people that migrated here in 1960s. And only Stuart Tregoning said hello. And he was the only one who really made us feel welcome. But soon others did. We arrived here, started to get in touch with the community of what was happening, and it wasn't a place to think that you had left urban thinking a long way away. No, PG&E wanted to build a nuclear power plant at Point Arena. Mendocino was torn between, are we going to have a water system, a sewer system, no system? Are we going to protect the town with the MHRB? How about the MCCSD, the MHRB? All of those things were just coming to the beginning of the thought process. And for me, what I saw was to listen to the elders, Mildred Benioff, Eleanor Severico, and a number of those people that were really trying to preserve this coast. It didn't happen on anything automatic. Every issue, every time there was preservation issue, there was strong pushback. Mendocino County had a liquidation mentality. And you go back over the 170 years of its history, and the idea was not long-term thinking. It was to monetize whatever could be resourced for fast money, and that's why you don't see any long permanent buildings. The streets are narrow. There isn't a real airport. You know, it goes on and on. We're not going to raise our grandkids here. We're going to come, exploit it, and leave. And that is what was happening back then, in my opinion. That's what I saw.
So, one thing I forgot to mention is that we have a short amount of time here, and I forgot to mention I'm going to give people gongs for time to remind to tie it up. But I also want to point out that I just want to reflect back what I've heard you say in terms of values. I heard a sense of protection, a sense of like wanting to protect what we have, but also spontaneity. And I love the idea of like, oh, you've got the truck and you're going to carry the piano. Like, we got to bring the piano.
That sharing continued. We were doing the equivalent of barn raising. We were helping others stack the wood, helping others build the woodshed, put the roof on the house, bring in windows. The windows, AgriLite Bronson Seconds. You can tell the era of architecture. Everybody was bringing up truckloads of these big seconds of glass panels. Right. And you can tell pretty closely about when that house was built by looking at the shape of the window doors. They're all shower doors.
In terms of values, the lists that have been given are, it's very interesting. Yes, they are individual, and it's true. All the things are correct for whether we lived communally, whether we were in single, whether we were feminists, whether we were in nuclear families, those values in terms of being here and having a society here came with each person. And then that's really amazing and interesting to me. And Linda and I were just talking about that. I think that there was always a tribe of people in human life that is looking for each other and that shares those values. And many of them are artists, but many are not. Many are gay, but many are not. Many are back to the land, but some of those are farmers that don't have those other values. I think that that is the deepest place I can look at this point in my life, is like, wait, the French Romantics had certain values like that. I think it's amazing to sit here and have good friends who perhaps are not the same, have done the same things, but are not, their identity is not tied in to this depth of whatever we want to call it. I mean, tribe is the word we use, but it's not the accurate word. Mm-hmm. It is a connection of values. So when I talk about coming and wanting to live communally and take care of kids, I'm trying to look at, well, what were the deeper values? Well, first of all, the values that we brought with us, the conditioned values, were still there. And those were part of the changes from being communal later. Those were the biggest challenge, I'd say, is that we did not do conscious work on the connection between these values that we held and the values that we were brought up with. And so there was something like, do what you want as long as you don't hurt anybody. But there was also something about giving. We were white, we were middle class mostly, we were educated, and so I know that the values that we held, that all the communes held, were that we had something to give, and that we were supposed to, in some way, not only become happier ourselves and live in with all those changes we talked about, but that was supposed to help society, was supposed to help. It wasn't just against, it was supposed to help to be really, really big about it, human evolution, you know. And that was not the thought, but as I'm looking, trying to see something historical as well as in that time, as well as in the future, there are people of all different styles all over the world through all times who share values and find each other based on those. And that, I find, is really quite something. Hmm. So, yes, so what were some that were not mentioned had to do with being more connected, offering our gifts, that our lives would be meaningful for the rest of society as well. And other than that, yeah, we just want to do everything different and new than all the ways that we had already lived with, all of them, from birth to sex to food to everything.
Say your name and where you come from.
I'm Stuart Greenberg, and I come from Earth. But most recently, Elk. Before that, inland, many years in the Laytonville area, and then many years in Kauai, and then Elk. The things that brought me out here have been mentioned so far. However, I had a lot of psychedelic experience in the 60s in the Midwest. And one of the things that occurred was feedback.
Did you get some feedback?
But I never listened to feedback, so I just kept taking more. No. The realization of prior values, typical Western capitalistic values, which my parents and everybody before me that lived in this country lived by, did not appeal until I took psychedelics. Prior to that, I'm sure I would have been president by now. Maybe not. But what happened was a connection was made in my consciousness, in my awareness, that all things were connected. And I couldn't deny that. The experience wasn't theoretical. It was actualized many, many, many times. Well, what do you do when you realize that everything is connected? You have to treat everything holy and sacred. Mm-hmm. It is us. We are us. There's me. You can't pick my nose, and I know not to pick your nose. But really, there's nose.
The nose.
There's very little boundary in love. There are boundaries on the material plane. So how do we deal with the paradox of being aware consciously to a spiritual nature while we live in a material society on the material plane? And prior to that, many people didn't have the opportunity to tune in, turn on, and drop out. You were a doctor, lawyer, dentist, pharmacist, or if you weren't college material, you rang the bell. If you're interested, talk to me later outside.
No. You got another minute to tie it up if you want to.
Oh, all right.
Keep going.
So coming here, the dream was to manifest, to personify what I had already been doing in Illinois. I had formed co-ops, had formed alternative schools, back to the land, building my own. Marriage ended and the family broke up, and the reason I came here wasn't a guided light per se, but get to California because it seemed like magnetism, that those particles which are attracted to that force, you're pulled to it. And if you were of that vibration at that time, this was one of the best places on the planet to come and manifest your reality.
I just wanted, my parents definitely.
And your name is?
Annika Williams, and my parents, John and Nadia, definitely felt that magnetism to this place. My dad came all the way from England to San Francisco and then ended up here and met my mom, and, you know, that's how we ended up here. But, yeah, that magnetism, met something pulling them here, and, yeah. So, I don't know.
Follow
yeah.
the vibes.
Okay, so this might be a good time to go ahead and ask the youth here that we have to us, the youth, who have come really to offer their reflection on what they've heard today. And the question right now is on, you know, what you've heard in terms of these values and the history of the place, and how you feel that that might resonate for you now, or, yeah, where does that go? Does that live in you?
My name is Michael Norman. I am from all over the place, but I live in Little River now with my wife, Emily. I moved out to California about 10 years ago from Wisconsin for a lot of the reasons that were talked about here. There was something definitely that drew me to California and has kept me here. I think it's true that we're drawn to people with shared values, and I found a lot of them here. I do have a prepared response, if that's all right.
Yeah.
I would say that some of these dreams and values have carried over, and some of them have not. Some of the dreams and values that I feel have carried over for some, to some degree, at least in Mendocino County, are personal liberty, independence, self-sufficiency, a disillusionment with and a rejection of the traditional American lifestyle, a strong sense of community, and a strong distrust of governmental authority. I tell you now that from my perspective, having lived in many places outside of beautiful Mendocino, and living in this society at my age, that this movement was ahead of its time. We could sure use a modern version of this right now. The values that attracted so many to the movement then are in need now, perhaps more than ever. If the Back to the Land movement and those like it had succeeded in effectively instilling humanism, collectivism, and sustainability into the larger American populace, then perhaps we wouldn't be in such a mess as we are now. I admire the radical approach of the Back to the Land movement, because when we are so marginalized by our political, governmental, and economic systems that we feel we no longer have any real say or control in the matter, some of us do what we must. I, for one, do not wish to be a passive accomplice or complicit in our society's perverse model of endless economic progress. The notion of turn on, tune in, and drop out is thus extremely seductive. Now, I've never lived in a commune before, and I understand that there are challenges that arise under that model that need yet to be figured out. But I know one thing: human beings do live better in community. So to me, the challenge we face is how can we do that better? Our people, our communities, our environment are crying out for us to find a different and a better way together. This requires us to identify that which is dysfunctional and fix it. Profound dysfunction requires radical change. We need leaders who can actually lead us towards something good. We need voices now, seemingly more than ever, that can influence us all towards those good values again. We must reorient ourselves again towards community and away from individual enrichment. Venture not far outside of our bubble here, and you will in short time be confronted with the stark reality that many of these values and dreams for a transformed world of equality and fraternity have in great part died on the vine. Despite the great utopian vision that many Back to the Landers had for themselves as individuals, our communities, and for society at large, we remain, and perhaps to an even greater degree now, a hyper-individualistic and deeply divided consumer culture.
Thank you very much.
I'm Gowan, and I'm lucky enough to be farming right across the road here in Casper, on land that Stuart Tregoning took care of for decades. I'm from here. I'm from here for generations and generations. My family were some of the original resource-extracting European immigrants who came here as loggers. There's actually a picture in one of the like historical records somewhere of my like great-great-great-grandfather with my great-great-grandfather on his lap going across in one of those like plank swings to a boat. Wow. And so my family was part of that generation that either welcomed or didn't welcome so much the hippies when they came back to the land here. My family actually liked them okay. And actually, after my great-grandfather died, my great-grandmother leased our family farm to a collective for $1 a year for a 100-year lease, and they're still there. And so that's where I grew up. And so I was surrounded by collective farming as a kid. And you know, nobody actually lived on the piece of land where the farm was. We lived right down the road, and you could stand in the middle of the vegetable garden and turn in a circle and see like tons of different family members' houses, and there was a ton of us kids, and we all ran back and forth in a pack between the houses. And so, you know, now as someone who's grown up, went to high school in Mendocino, went to college, and then come back here largely to grapple with some of these big questions of the Back to the Land movement and of what does land management actually mean and what does living in relationship with land actually mean. My relationship to the values of this movement have changed and evolved a lot over my lifetime. I'm incredibly grateful. You know, I got to catch my baby niece when she was born. I learned how to do a million things that most kids never get to know how to do. I've never had a single mean thought about my body or another woman's body. And, you know, I have been supported by the most amazing group of skilled, funny, quirky women, a lot of them in this room. I actually lived with Zoe when I moved back briefly. And I've also gone through periods of being really disillusioned and really angry. Particularly because, you know, it was a time where sometimes you could just send your kids off with strangers and it would be fine, and sometimes it wasn't fine. And I grew up with a lot of peers that, you know, they did a lot of parenting their parents. And when you have 17 siblings that are all named different weird, you know, words that they thought were cool from other cultures, because they really liked drugs but really didn't like condoms. There's a way that, and I think in my generation, there's a sense of greater urgency. There's a very different economic situation. And there's a different sense of a global perspective that is partially technology-based. I think that now we have the ability to connect with people all over the world very quickly. And that's also largely the stage that we're in with kind of late capitalism.
Thank you very much. So we're going to turn this discussion now to you guys. I can feel us moving already with the youth responses into the center of the program. We will definitely go into the deeper part of what it means to really strive for paradise. So I encourage us to, you know, to take all everything that has been said. But what I'm asking for is for us to go back to the dream, because we do need to remember the dream, remember the positive values. This is the part of this discussion where we're reaching back into ourselves and remembering that inspiration. So it's definitely important for us to also start looking at what didn't work. And we will get to that part.
My name's Rebecca Alm. I live near Casper, just about a half a mile away. And I came here in 72, and I have a question. Do you think that paying our taxes now is in line with these values? I stopped paying mine.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think it's hard to not feel complicit and like an accomplice in our society's perverse model of endless economic growth if you are actively participating in that and funding it. I think what needs to change is our priorities of how we spend our collective wealth. And so that's the first step. And once that's accomplished, then I think it's the right thing, you know, to pitch in. And if the collective wealth is being utilized in a way that enriches everybody, then how can that not be in line with these values?
No, it's not. But it's not necessarily more morally righteous to have our land be taken and sold for vacation homes either, which is what would happen if I stopped paying my taxes.
Tell us your name and where you
are. I'm Allison Gardner. I currently live in Albion. I have lived on the Mendocino coast since 1969, and before that, Santa Barbara. And it's just a comment on the tax question. There's taxes and then there's taxes. I feel land taxes are worth paying because that stays within the state. It's the income taxes that I think are questionable as to, and I think a lot of people around here do not make enough income to have to pay income tax. I have only paid income tax probably less than 5 years in my life, mostly because I don't believe that income taxes are well spent. And so I try to keep my income below where I need to pay taxes.
So I might reflect on this in terms of a value that I'm hearing is a continual desire for separation from the system, right? Making a stand. I'm just reflecting this in terms of values because I want to get us into that frame of mind.
Marilyn Mother Bear Scott, I live in Albion now. I am a first generation American on my father's side, a couple generations removed on my mother's side. My father was an immigrant, a borderland Scot, who came over at age 11 and got drafted into the war, Second World War, at the age of 34 with two children and died when I was 7. Look, it still makes me teary. And so I became a pacifist at that point. And I just want to point out also that I had assimilated my father's values of being a humanitarian, a person who really love came first, family came first, land, helping people. That all came first with him. And so with the death, his death in the war, I became a pacifist and grew into being a conscious activist and nonviolent activist as I grew older. When I went to Boston, I was the first person in my family to go to college, so I don't fit into the paradigm. I'm a little bit older than most of the people who are speaking. And so the roots of my back to the land trip happened really early in a different way. And they were growing in me without my knowledge, without my plans. And my plan was I wanted to go to college, and I went to Boston, and I worked my ass off to do it, 72 hours a week just to get my education in the years at Boston University. Now, I also had some good friends there, and they were still at Harvard. Their names were Leary and Alpert. And we also had friends in the south end of Boston, and so we started smoking pot in the 50s, and my husband made mescaline in 1962 early. So this was the psychedelic revolution that was beginning, and we were all part of it in Boston. So a lot of people think it started out here, but for me it started back there. And then there was the dream to go to California. Now, why were we going to California? Because of all the things that Cal said about the freedoms, the open door, the flowers in your hair were nice too. And so we made that nice trip across the country in the summer of love in 1967, my first husband, Byron, and I, and our two children. And that was a magical journey. And getting here, we then proceeded to go to La Honda and build the commune. So I just want to talk about values. I had to give that little preface because the values of communal living were about sharing. Now, I was in Boston when JFK got assassinated, and I was being groomed to be a council member in the government and the census and all that. And I didn't want to do that because of the assassination. I realized that there was something about improving your own self, that the changes had to be within. So one of the values was a deep sense of integrity with the values of your true self. And however they emerged, that wasn't an intellectual process. It was something that we just were magically drawn toward and beckoned us at the same time as drawing us forward and us stepping into it. And so I want to talk about that invisible energy just a little bit that we do not understand completely, and we'll call it a magic, a drawing in. I mean, the Redford in his Celestine Prophecy talked about this too. Is this invisible beckoning that you walk into kind of blindly. I say, follow your nose, you get to where you're going. And the commune didn't work out. Now, this is a value too. Choice, we have to talk about choice. Because communism is a political system where people are governed by force to live a certain way, to obey certain rules, and if they don't, they fall under punishment. If we're going to have communes and communal living, we have to also have the deep sense of an integrity with true self and have choice. And so as we go forward, choice is a very important part of it, because as soon as we lose the freedom of a personal choice, we are losing everything that we were moving toward in the, quote, freedom of our dream, the dream of our freedoms. And so,
Marilyn, this is really great. And in order to have other people,
I think that was my 5 minutes.
That was fantastic. And one of the things I want to just really quickly reflect is there's this paradox, there's this tension between community living and individual freedom. And that's a difficult one to continue to hold. But I think that that's just present in all of us. I'm saying that dynamic of that tension. So you had a hand up over here.
Say your name and where you live.
Donna Montag, and I live in Elk.
Oh.
Do you want me to hold it? So just briefly, I mean, there is a conversation that I've had. I mean, I'm 72 years old now, and I've lived here for 45 years. I've had a conversation with a lot of people my age about the dreams that we had of self-sufficiency and how we created these institutions here on the coast, and if they will be preserved by young people. And there's a lot of issues about it. You've probably read things in the paper about young people being in fire departments and that kind of thing. There aren't as many young people here now. We have several of them here on the stage, which is great. But they aren't as many people, and they also, I feel like a lot of young people feel like that these institutions were created by our generation and they don't own them. And I feel like that is a value that we have to think about passing on, of how this is going to continue and how are we going to keep these institutions happening here.
I'm David from Ukiah.
David who?
David Burton. So I'll reflect on the interviews. I think the work that Kate and Sarah and you have been doing is really important work. This is foundational work, creating a record from all the people you interviewed, which is more than you've actually heard on the episodes. But this is enormous historical work that they've done. And you've done. And I think we should all be cognizant of that, because all these interviews are going to be a resource for historians, sociologists, agricultural experts, to find out what influenced this county and the formation of this county from the 60s up till today. I've not lived in Mendocino County all that long, going on 2 years now. But to me, from the place I came from in Yakima, Washington, I could tell the difference. The influence of the Back to Land movement and the generations that followed are very strong and have changed the face of this county. So we should all be cognizant of that too. But I do want to, I think my major point is the appreciation for the work you all did doing the interviews, and for having them now as a historical resource for those who will follow.
Thank you.